everybody, and welcome to my podcast, Fulfillment in Faith. I am your host, Shannon Bondor, and I am a best-selling author, mentor, mindset and manifesting coach, and public speaker. Today's episode is a continuation of my series, You Are Not the Only One. I was brought forth to do this series because during my healing from my addiction to alcohol, there were so many times that the universe had brought me to silence. And during those times is when I learned so many things about myself and I was guided. I was guided to talk openly about my past, my abuse, my addiction, and to speak my truth. From those moments of silence is when we learn, we grow, we teach, and then we help others. Today, my very, very special guest is Ian Westmoreland. So I'd like to welcome Ian now. How are you, Ian?
Well, I've got a man cold, but I'm looking forward to doing this and hopefully that the coffee doesn't get in the way. So, but thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I'm very excited to have you, speak about your story of what brought you to stillness. But first off, I would love for you to share with the audience where you're from and a little bit about yourself. And from there is when you can go right into your story of what you brought to your, what brought you to your stillness.
Okay. So first I'm from Sydney in Australia. And it's a beautiful winter's morning over here. And I guess the key thing, something I'm really blessed with is a great family. My wife and I have been married for over 40 years. I was going to say, it's been great for me. She probably gives it a slightly lower rating, I think.
Oh, there's good and bad in everything, is there not, Ian?
When I say to her, I tell her I love her, her response is, I know.
Oh, okay.
So we've got four kids, grown-up kids, and we've got 12 grandkids. And so blessed with just a beautiful family. They all live relatively nearby, so we catch up on a regular basis. And I guess my story starts, I don't know how much information you want me to go through, but as a kid, I suffered from a lack of self-esteem, a lack of confidence. And I think in my late teens, I sort of set a goal for myself. If I just be average, that'd be brilliant. And always had a desire to try and make money. And I would always had a full-time job. I left school at 17. And I would have a full-time job, but then I would try and do other businesses on the side to try and make money. I used to import sporting goods, squash rackets and tennis rackets, things like that. When we got married, we actually moved into in Australia, what we call a milk bar, but a general store. And I would open the store in the morning, then head off to my full-time job, and then close the store over night time and would work at Saturday and Sunday. So life is full of challenges like that. As our kids happened very quickly. Our first three happened in the first 4 years of marriage. And again, we were struggling a little bit for money. My wife was cleaning houses and working at a restaurant. Then I guess fast forward, I progressively, even though I'm not formally qualified, I started to work my way up through the corporate ladder. And after a while, I took a couple of brave decisions, mainly encouraged by my wife. I became a senior manager in the IT space. So I was managing development of new systems in Melbourne, Australia. Then we moved to New Zealand for a couple of years over there and then moved to Sydney. And I continued to do that. And as became more and more financially comfortable. And then in 2013, I started to increasingly think there's more to life than just making money and delivering software changes. And a key day for me on the 10th of September, 2013, I got on the train to come to work. And the lead up to that, I've been meditating around this, you said, this more to life. And what I read that morning transformed the thinking for the rest of my life. And in May 2014, I left paid work. So I've been a full-time volunteer. I certainly didn't retire. I'm working harder now than ever. I became a full-time volunteer. So I've been, for the last 9 years, doing what I feel I'm called to do. Now, there's a whole lot of things that happened along that journey that shaped the path that I'm on. I guess one of the early things was that I went to, I was running some men's breakfast at my place. We would, 70 men would turn up and I'd have a couple of speakers and we put on a breakfast. The speakers would maybe around issues more relevant to men, could be around mental health or keeping fit, or could be even talking about fishing. And I got an invitation from our local federal government minister to come along to a presentation he was giving. And it came to the president of the men's breakfast. I got some grandiose title. And I went along. Sorry, I've missed a key point here. One of the things I felt led to do was to start mentoring young kids in high schools. And I signed up, I did the training course, and I started mentoring year 7 and year 8 students in Sydney high schools, which I loved doing. And then I found out about a mentoring program for kids at primary school through Kids Hope, and I started doing that as well. And then I found out about another mentoring program into the family environment called Coach. So I became a coordinator for that. So I was actively involved in three mentoring programs. And in 2018, I was mentoring a young guy in one of the Sydney high schools. And he shared with me that his father had suicided. His mum was an addict who was in and out of rehab. He was living with his grandparents, which he hated. And then he just turned and he looked at me straight in the eyes, and then he started crying, and then he said, "Ian, help me." And I guess one of the things I've learned on this journey is I have a high level of empathy. It could be good, can be bad, but it's and after that we met, I debriefed with the program counselor and I told her what had happened, looking for advice, and she surprised me. She said, "Ian, are you okay?" And I just started crying myself over the situation. And then it took a couple of months and I was flat. And I suddenly realized one Saturday morning, I realized I wanted to have a mentor just like all these kids that I've been mentoring. And I should explain, mentoring is such a broad term. For most people, when you say mentor, they think of someone with acquired skills, knowledge, experience, who guides and directs and advises someone else. And that's not what I'm talking about. I call it life mentoring, and it's predominantly listening. It's supporting, encouraging. People aren't broken. They don't need to be fixed. They just need to be validated. They just need to be shown they're worthy. They need to be loved. So I looked around for the nearest organization that provided mentoring to men, life mentoring to men, and was surprised and incredibly disappointed to find there was nothing suitable. As a demographic, men struggle more. Suicide rates 3 to 4 times that of women. It's a challenge for us. As a man, there's so much confusion around, well, what is a man? How does a man behave? Well, and it's I guess it's changing from being a man with someone who opened the doors, things like that, to a lot of confusion. So when I couldn't find anything, it motivated me to write a proposal to establish what was to become Mentoring Men. And remembering I'd already been through three lots of mentor training courses and I'd been doing this, so I had a number of ideas around that. And now I rejoined the story where I was then got invited to go along and hear the federal minister speak. And this event, the event was that he shared this powerful story of the suicide of his father over 20 years before. He shared how he and the rest of the family had missed the signs. The father's pattern of behavior had changed. And he had formed a partnership with an organization, we call it Lifeline in Australia, but it's someone who is really struggling in life, potentially has suicide ideation, can ring this number and they get through to someone. So he formed a partnership with them and they had developed a suicide prevention course. And what he wanted was people from representing every community group in his electorate to do this course to hopefully prevent some of the suicides that were happening. So his talk had a huge impact on me. And look, I don't know why, but it's one of these things that happened. I took a manila folder with my proposal for Mentoring Men. I had no idea what it was going to talk about. And as soon as he finished, I made a beeline for it. He saw me coming. And his name was Julian Lisa, amazing man. I said, Julian, where was the support that could have helped prevent your father getting to the point of suicide? And I talked to him about mentoring men. And he just got it straight away. He said, Ian, come and see me in my office. He provided a whole lot of guidance and input. He agreed to sign on as an ambassador for the program. And then that was it. I'm committed. Once I was going to do everything in my power to make that happen. And I didn't have a lot of the skills or experience. I totally underestimated how much work was involved. But we launched in November 2018. Julian made an amazing speech to officially launch us. And that was it. So we started slow start. My wife, like I say, agreed, reluctantly agreed, I'll say, to put some of our money in to give us some seed funding. And then once COVID started, it just boomed. And the program is Australia-wide. Thousands of men have engaged. It's turned into something from a few thousand dollars we put in. The annual budget's well over $1 million now. We're saving lives. We're transforming lives through that process. And I shared the story on podcasts like this, and there's a lot of interest overseas. I'm also frequently asked, can we get a mentoring women going? And there's a number of things that I'm excited about that I want to progress. I guess another key moment at the end of 2021, we had sufficient funding, and I was just struggling to keep up with the workload. Like, it was just massive. There's a support team around me, but most of the roads seemed to lead back to me. And we advertised, we put in place a paid CEO, who's actually a psychologist, or trained as a psychologist, and is now a dedicated team. So I've stepped away from the operational side. I stepped off the board about 6 weeks ago, but I'm obviously a passionate ambassador for this. So that gave me a little bit more thinking time. And Shannon, are you okay for me to continue on to the next thing? Do I want to like pause, or do I like just keep going?
No, absolutely. I am enjoying every minute and I'm just mesmerized by what you're saying. And so please keep going. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I mentioned that I, as a child, a young man, I suffered from lack of confidence and self-esteem. And one of the things that gave me a lot of hope, optimism, some confidence was reading people's stories. I loved reading biographies, autobiographies, stories like Nelson Mandela, stories where people had overcome adversity, tremendous adversity, and the goodness that shone from these people and what they were able to achieve. And I had an idea in 1993 for to capture these stories and into a book, and that just a short story for people to share what they'd overcome. And it would give hope to people like me. And I know there's a lot of people, young people. It's every generation, I think, has people like I was feeling. And so I wrote to several community leaders in Australia, suggesting this idea and hoping they would do something. And one of them is a famous entrepreneur in Australia, whose name is Dick Smith. And he sent me back a handwritten note. And the note said, Ian, this is a great idea. And then he added, you do it. And because that back then, when you're lacking confidence, I thought it had to be someone well known, someone famous, someone that people could listen to. That was where my head's at. So when I stepped away from the mentoring men operational side, I thought, I'm going to do this. And I let a few of my friends go. Friends know. And by this stage, I've realized I've built up so many connections through mentoring men. Amazing how you start. It's like our connection. It's just things start to happen when you start moving, and as you're passionate, people start to engage and get on board. Anyway, one of these guys rang me and he said, Ian, I've got the name for your project. I said, what is it? He said, oh, Kintsugi. And I said, I've never heard of it. What is it? And he said, oh, it's a Japanese term. And when I looked at it, there was a legend was there was a Japanese emperor who had some valuable pottery. I'll hold up my cup of tea here. And over time, it chipped, cracked, and showed the signs of wear and tear. And he said to his craftsmen, fix it, repair it, make it brand new. And they couldn't do that. But what they could do as part of the repair was highlight where it had been damaged using a precious metal like gold. And now when you look at it, it's far more beautiful and it's far more valuable than what it was before. And so, Shannon, it's the metaphor for, and I know a bit of your story already, for the Shannons and the Ians, our lived experience. And these lived experiences, they make us more beautiful and valuable to the people around us in terms of support. And we help people reframe how they see their adversity. It's almost like they see it as a blessing because it's shined the light on it. So what we do, because the technology changed in 30 years, we have a relaxed conversation like this. I don't do the hosting. Someone else, I've got other people who do the hosting. I tend to talk too much and, oh, that's great. Let me tell you my story. Sorry, I had to cough there. So we have the relaxed conversation. It gets edited and it's published as audio, video, podcast. But I'd still love the idea of a book. And there's an amazing author in New Zealand who takes a transcript of the conversation and she writes up these stories. So that's what I'm doing. It's called Kintsugi Heroes. The people who share their stories, I just see them as heroes. And we capture any sort of adversity theme. And like we've captured about 100 conversations so far, but we capture around trauma, grief, addiction, physical disability, mental illness, and a whole bunch of had a brain fade. I can't remember. But there's an adversity out there. One that I've got a huge passion for at the moment, and I'm progressing. Really exciting news around this, but it's around domestic violence. And the key difference, I've captured a number of stories of people who have been victims of domestic violence. What I want to do is capture stories of people who perpetrated domestic violence and have come through that. And this is, there's too much of a focus on symptoms,
mm-hmm.
way not enough focus on the cause. And this message got through to me in a really powerful way. Addiction kept coming up in conversations and drugs. It's interesting, when we think of addiction, most people think of substance abuse. And of course, it could be me and my work ethic, or it could be social media, mm-hmm. or eating a whole bunch of other things. But anyway, back then I thought addiction and drugs. So I started meeting with people who were substance addicts, trying to get an understanding. And I was talking to one of our mentors one day, and he used to take drugs. And he shared with me this revelation. He said, if you want to reduce illicit drug usage, he said, stop sexual abuse. Now, it took me 5 seconds to understand what he was saying. But then when I understood it, it just transformed my thinking. The old Ian, they're choosing to do this. Why are they, they're on the corner. They're addicted. That's their own fault or whatever. Terrible judgmental thoughts. But when I see or I consider this person could be numbing the pain, trying to numb the pain of something, it just and all the empathy that I now realize I had all changed. And, oh, wow, this is so sad. What can I do to help? Is there something I can do? And I see that so often we are way too quick to judge and we focus on symptoms. Let's try and address the underlying root causes. And in Australia, we're pumping hundreds of millions of dollars into supporting people who have been impacted by domestic violence. And clearly we need to do that. But what about trying to prevent it in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
And I think storytelling is going to be a key way of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? I agree with you 100% on that, for sure. Yeah. just kind of looking back to Ian, there sure isn't that little boy inside of you anymore that is insecure, lacks confidence. That's pretty amazing.
I'm far more comfortable with who I am. I used to have this, you know, as I said, I'm unqualified, and I these people, even the local MP, and it's almost like I had a pecking order in my mind, and I was down near the bottom. But now I don't. That's gone. You're right. I just, we're all people. We all, these people appear to have it all together, generally don't, and it's great when we get into a sharing environment. But there's still a little boy. When I'm with my grandkids, if you had to see me, I become like a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old, and I love it. So I love spending that time and the games we play. And I realized recently how much I love reading stories to them. I never thought much about that. I put on different voices, and one of my favorite photos, I use it as part of a presentation, but I'm reading an Australian book, Bananas in Pajamas. It's like a TV show, but I'm reading this to 4 young grandkids. 3 of them have got dummies in their mouth, and they're captivated by the book. Shannon, is this like videoed, or just is it audio and video, or just audio?
No, I put it on my podcast, and then a couple weeks after that, it goes onto my YouTube channel, so people do see the video as well.
Okay. Can I, are you okay if I share that picture?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. No, because I seen it and I think it's absolutely adorable. And then for the audience members that don't know what a dummy is, it's called a soother.
Sorry, I didn't realize that.
I thought, oh, I better clarify that. Yeah, it's a soother, or in our family, we call it a susu. So yeah, but no, absolutely show that picture because it is so adorable.
So, Shannon, could you give me access, please? So just share
the host.
While you're doing that, it's just there's something funny the other way. So in America, you're Canadian, but in America they talk about fanny packs, and that's it's a totally different meaning in Australia. So it's just anyway, it's so there's the picture. So
yeah,
and you look at the interest in this book. Are these they're twins in the middle. They're now turned 8. The guy, there's one boy there with in the blue outfit. He's just turned 8 last week. And this one over here, I was with the ones on the outside yesterday. She's 9, turning 10.
So. Yeah,
and I as part of this, I just talk about the benefits of storytelling, and there's a lot of interesting things that happen when we share stories.
Well, I can tell you just by everybody I've shared my story with, or they've shared their story with me, it's almost like there's that little piece of me which is in them, and then their story brings a little piece of them into me because I can relate in some way. And it's just become so heartfelt. And I think the more that all of us start to share our stories, the more that we can, you know, start to be, you know, unite as one on this earth. And then, you know, I just think of how many of the diseases which could be cured. It just so many different areas where we find fault within this earth would definitely be healed just by everybody starting to talk, to be open. For us to start embracing each other, to spread our love. And I think this is one of the quickest ways that I can think is everybody just talking and listening. Listening is a huge thing, for sure.
What I picked up in this journey over the last 9 years is there's an epidemic of unidentified and unaddressed trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I guess we're there. We're happy to share our stories, our vulnerability. And that can become contagious, mm-hmm. beneficially contagious. Oh, okay. I'm not the, because sometimes we think we're the only one going through this. But the more people who share their stories, like one of the projects we worked on was to capture stories of people impacted by the Black Summer bushfires in Australia in 2019 and 20. And there is so much unresolved trauma there. People, particularly men, can't talk about it. That and the we've seen. We had a psychologist who is a specialist in trauma and supporting people as a result of trauma from natural disasters, share that the 2 to 5 year period after the traumatic event is crucial. He said, what you see is things that don't appear to be directly related, but are start to happen. Addictions start to develop, relationships fall apart, self-harm is being considered. And I've seen that firsthand. I shared a bit of my story in some of those areas, and people come up. I haven't been able to talk about this. I changed jobs. Oh, my dad refuses to acknowledge it even happened. And so, and it's, I mean, that's related to natural disasters, but I'm assuming I talked before about abuse as a child. I'm assuming I know there's a lot of that around there. I supported a young guy who'd been sexually abused as a child, and that guy was in his 40s. And the unaddressed trauma was still there, the anger, the hurt. So yeah, I see storytellers being so important, like what you said, Shannon, to just to help improve our physical and mental health.
Absolutely. Looking back at your journey, and you've been affiliated with all these different organizations and where you are now, what is the biggest thing is your take back of what you've learned from this whole process?
I guess it's the it's that no, it's that Brené Brown TED talk around shame and vulnerability. And we all put on a facade. In my corporate life, there was one there, and it was like you never wanted to show any signs of weakness. I've seen, I guess the big learning for me has just been the struggle that so many people, most people have. Well, as part of our mentor training course for mentoring men, we had this talking circle. And as even though I founded Mentoring Men, I still had a bit of a facade on. And someone had developed this mentor training course, and on the second day was this talking circle, and he explained that the idea is we hand around an object. Whoever's got the object shares what they're thinking. No one interrupts. Sorry, what they're feeling. No one interrupts. They can say whatever they want. They can pass it. Then passed on to the next person. I thought, this is going to suck. I don't want to do this. And I'm fortunate that I wasn't the first one. And the very first guy, so I miss my dad. And then next, I can't get access to my kids. My mum gambled away our house. And these people just started these powerful stories, sharing in a trusting environment. And when it came to me, I just totally open, shared what was going on. And one of them, we worried about one of our grandkids was going to be born with Down syndrome. And I had that advice just prior to this. So I talked about that, how I was feeling about that. So it's a that's what I'd say. That find for me, find someone to trust. Someone who's not going to judge you, someone who's going to listen to you, not tell you what to do, and just share what you're feeling. It's interesting with men. We break our arm, we go to the doctor, no hesitation, but we're feeling incredibly sad, or depressed, or anxious, or suicidal, and there's a reluctance to go and see a mental health professional. In some ways, it's the advantage what mentoring men is, because I'm not going to go and see the mental health professional because in their mind, me, oh, well, I am broken. There's a real issue there. But I'll go and chat to Ian. Ian just, we just, he's just a good listener, hopefully. And we just go for a walk, and as trust builds, it can start to share. So it's real good. But I'm so mental health professional. Often we do for mentoring, we both happen in parallel. The senior mental health professional, but then we've got this long term, our mentoring relationships. We recommend a minimum of 6 months, and you'll hear, Ian, I've never told anyone this before, but or more about the real me than my mates known for the mates I've had for 20 years now. So it's a powerful thing. So that would be to me the vulnerability to reach out, to share what's really going on with people that you trust and could listen to you.
My next question is, what is it that you would want others to know? That so someone in the audience is listening to your story, and if they want to reach out, what advice would you give them?
I guess it's similar to what I was saying before. It's okay not to be okay. It's interesting. There's a I've got this view of joy and happiness, and I believe that it's good for us to strive to always be joyful, no matter what the circumstances are. But to always be happy is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Someone close to you dies, or you've got a man cold, like
yeah,
it's a bit. So it's okay for happiness to fluctuate all over the place. That's no worries. It's based on our circumstances. But I think this ability to, even in the circumstances, still have an attitude of joy and think about the positive aspects of life, and that's what I guess I strive to do. I'm going through cancer recovery at the moment. It's interesting. The cancer support group contacted me and asked me if I like to do quilting, which just cracked me up. I don't know why. Do I look like a quilter? I don't know. But the fact they did that, and then I thought, I'm going to capture a series of stories, Kintsugi hero stories, around living with cancer. And I think you touched on this before, Shannon. The mental attitude we have is really important in terms of our physical welfare. If you like, it's the placebo effect. If you support it and you think you're going to get better, then there's more chance of getting better. And with cancer, there's been a lot of breakthroughs. Often breakthroughs are overstated, but there's certainly a lot around that. So we're going to do a series of podcasts around that. Now, I'd love to give hope and inspiration to people going through that. And for me, I did one. I've got what they call metastasized melanoma. In Australia, we have a lot of skin-related cancers, and they get worse. And this woman contacted me, and she had what I have, only a lot worse, and she had it 10 years ago. And for me to be on a podcast with her, I'm starting out through this journey, and there she's literally a mountaineer. She climbs mountains, and she's out there doing that. Just gives me hope and encouragement. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, but
yeah, you did. Yeah, absolutely. And where are you now in life?
I'm living what I call my best life. For the last 6 months, this thing happened to me on a Greek island in September last year. And that, I could share that story if you want. I don't know who.
Yeah, I would love to hear it. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So my wife and I are keen bike riders, and she thought it'd be great if we did this tour of on this little boat. It's like a pirate ship that goes around the various Greek islands. And we're there with a bunch of other cyclists, maybe 20 of these. And we pull in at a Greek port. They'd unload all the bikes, and the tour guide would take us up. He had an e-bike, interestingly. We had to, some had e-bikes. So there's a bit of bragging. There's still a bit of ego in this, and we didn't have e-bikes. Anyway, we ride up, and he stopped us on this, on the top of this, I call it mountain, maybe it was a hill. And he started talking about, there's an island in the distance. And he started talking about Onassis, and he shared that. And for Greeks suffered economically, like it's really bad times. And he was talking about Onassis as being a huge Greek success story. So Aristotle Onassis is the guy's name. And he was born into poverty. And then he initially made his money on the black market with tobacco. And then he said he invented packaged cigarettes and made an absolute fortune. And then he moved into shipping and became a shipping magnate. And I think he became the richest man in the world, certainly near the top. And most people know him as the one who married JFK's widow. And then the tour guide said, he was rumored to have said, they say money can buy love. I want to tell you it's not true. I'm the richest man in the world. I've never found true love. Like while he's married to Jackie, apparently he was having affairs and different relationships all
Oh,
over
okay.
the place. And I put up my hand. I said, look, I just want to query your definition of success. So you've got a guy who's invented a product that's killed millions of people and caused untold harm to millions more. And he's never found true love. I would argue that someone who's relatively poor but has strong relationships and connections is far more successful than he was. And a few of the people sort of agreed with me. And anyway, when we came back to Australia, I woke up jet lagged at 4 a.m. And I, for my own purposes, I thought, I want to put this into a picture because in a way, I was defining a best life. And I actually have a power. In fact, will I show that channel? I've got a,
Let's
can I
do
show
it.
it? Yeah.
Let's do
Okay.
it.
So I'll just go. Sorry.
Nope, it's all good.
So I called it the meaning of life. Now, it's a complex or complicated picture. But over on the right-hand side here, you'll see my definition of our best life is where we use our talents and experiences to positively impact the world around us. It's where we get genuine contentment and fulfillment. But when we start off in life, we start heading towards there. But then life hits us. We get sick. We have relationships break down. We have mental health issues. We get impacted, social media, trauma. There's a whole bunch of other things. And one of the key things, we get sucked into materialism, advertising, the bigger house, the bigger car, the bigger boat. And for most people, we lose consideration of what our best life would look like. And when I put this up, I say to people, look, I did this for myself, but if I just for 10 seconds, I could get you to just take a step back from where you are in life at the moment and just think about what things would be in your best life and are you moving towards them? And I love the Mark Twain quote at the bottom. The two most important days in your life are the day you're born and then the day you find out why. And for me, a key finding out why was on the 10th of September 2013. And the journey, I mean, it's been hard. It's been hard work. There's been sacrifices. There's been challenges. But hand on my heart, the last 9 years have been the most purposeful, fulfilling, life-changing. You know, I thought at this age, early on, it'd be going out and playing golf or putting a caravan on the back and traveling around or doing something like that. But for me, I'm not, for other people, that could be 100% fine. But for me, I'd much rather do what I'm doing than do those other things. So, yeah, life for me, fulfillment-wise, is never been better.
Absolutely beautiful, Ian. Now that we're getting to the end of the interview here, are there any final words that you would like to say to the audience?
Hopefully someone's got something, some benefit of what I said.
I think
We've
so.
got,
I think so.
I'd encourage people to just listen to stories, share stories. It's amazing. There's this fantastic poem written. We played play as part of our mentor training course. We'll read it. It's written in 1979 by a guy called Ray Horton. And it's called Just Listen. And when we start to just listen or ask some questions of people, it's amazing what comes out. And I guess and I talk a lot, but it's sometimes an alarm will go off in my head. It's Ian, shut up. Something important here. Just listen. And I start to listen. So be a great listener. take an interest in other people's lives. And you, oh, sorry, can I share one of the story?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would love for you to. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mentored a young guy in Sydney High School in 2015. And about 3 months ago, and in that mentoring relationship, it's only at school. There's no exchange of any contact information for child safety reasons and all that. And I didn't think, well, he used to take a lot, he used to wag school. Like, do you use the term wagging over there? No, okay.
No.
He used to he used to not turn up to school frequently. Truant, I don't know, whatever, it's gonna get lost in translation. And what happened after we started, I meet up with him every week. He used to take different days off. He'd wag on different days. Anyway, fast forward 3 months ago, I had a phone call from the mentoring organization saying this young guy had contacted them asking if they would give him my contact details. And they contacted me and I said, sure. So we caught up for a cup of coffee. And this strapping young guy. And what he wanted to do was tell me the impact that mentoring had on his life. Virtually everyone I mentored came from a broken family, never, often no male role model. And he talked about what he was going through. I observed none of this. I was just catching up to this guy and we chat, listen, laugh. With the focus on him telling his story, but you know, we talk about sport and other stuff. But and in fact, this guy then went on and he's actually done a promotional film for the mentoring organization, and they asked me to come in and shake his hand as part of that. And I guess the reason for raising that, I had no idea the impact I had. But the people listening to this, if they go out and maybe take that interest, ask that question, listen to the response, they could be blown away by what they achieve through that. Can I put a plug in? If people want to hear some of the stories,
Oh, absolutely. No, because
absolutely.
what I want you to do now is I want to talk about I want you to give the audience basically all of your links, information, your website, all of that, because there's a lot of information that you've shared here, and I know that people are going to be very interested. So whatever you say is going to be put into the podcast notes. So shoot
Fantastic.
away,
Okay, so
shoot away.
our website is kintsugiheroes.com.au. Now, I spell kintsugi because I don't pronounce it properly, I guess, but it's kintsugi heroes, heroes, .com.au. If anyone wants to find out more and wants to chat to me, I would welcome an email and we can set up a call. My name is email address is Ian at kintsugiheroes.com.au. As mentioned before, our content is published via video format via YouTube and through all the main audio podcast platforms. The first two books, one will definitely be out before the end of the year, and hopefully the other one will as well. And interestingly, the content's been broadcast, apart from the podcast platforms, it's been broadcast across over 300 radio stations throughout Australia to an audience that they say is about 6 million.
Oh,
And
beautiful.
it's just, yeah, it's like it's just keep learning. But the very first story was around grief. This guy shared about the death of his wife through cancer. He was in tears, people in tears,
Yeah.
listening to it.
Can I
And
ask
then
what
from
the format where it's been broadcast over to 6 million people? Which format is that one, if you don't mind me asking?
that's fine. So it's interesting. We let the podcasts, when they're produced, they go for however long they need to go for. When they go for radio, they need to be shortened to 27 minutes and 50 seconds. So it fits in within their program. I gather that's like a standard. So I guess they're 30-minute blocks and they have to allow for supporters or sponsors or advertisers or whatever around that. So I've got an editor who's just moved to Ireland and he he does the audio video editing and produces the snippets. So it's been a huge learning curve. The quality is getting better and will continue to get better. Most of the funding for this has come from me and my wife. But as I'm hoping it will go the way of mentoring men. Well, in fact, I'm confident it will go the way of mentoring men, that more organisations will get involved. It's fantastic bang for buck. Like a corporate could, this content, the audience will just keep growing, and it's a way of getting their branding. As long as that corporate's values align with our values, then yeah, no problems at all.
Yeah. No, absolutely beautiful. So like I said to the audience members, everything is going to be in the podcast notes. And at this time, I want to say thank you so much, Ian, for being a part of my journey, being a part of my podcast. And I am so, so absolutely blessed to have this opportunity to be with you and for us to converse and share our energy. This was absolutely amazing. So thank you so much for that.
Shannon, thank you for the opportunity. I love what you're doing, and to be a part of that, there's exciting times ahead for you. I can see that because I know a bit about your journey, and I wish you all the best with this. So keep up the good work.
Thank you. And I feel I'm definitely got an exciting journey coming ahead, because I can really feel it. And you know what? I'm starting to see a lot of it come now too. So thank you. I'm glad that you have noticed. Thank you very much, and blessings to you. I want to say thank you for sharing this time with me, and don't forget to subscribe so you receive every episode, and please share this podcast with others. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram, and if you would like more information on my mindset and manifesting coaching, go to shannonmondor.com. Until next episode, blessings to all, and thank you for being a part of my journey.